In the Four Bases of Success, the Buddha talks about four kinds of concentration. Concentration based on desire, concentration based on persistence, concentration based on intentness, and concentration based on your powers of what he calls discrimination, your ability to see distinctions, to analyze things. Well, these are probably not four separate types of concentration, because every state of concentration requires desire and persistence and intentness, and benefits from using your powers of analysis. After all, if you don't like what you're focused on, it's hard to get the desire going, and it's hard to get concentrated on it, regardless of whether you want to be persistent or intent or whatever. This is one of the reasons why the Buddha offers so many different topics for concentration, so you can find one that works for you. The breath is the most common one, the one he taught the most, because you can do a lot with the breath. You can change the breath. You can make it longer, shorter, deeper, more shallow. And it's a process very intimately connected with your sense of the body. So it keeps you anchored right here, right now. So try to make a breath. Try to find a way of breathing that you really like. That'll help you settle down. If you have trouble finding the breath, there are alternative topics. You can focus on the parts of the body, the 32 different parts that we chant about so often. Hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, flesh, skin, on into the bones, into the different organs. This is not necessarily as pleasant a topic, but some people find it really riveting. We've been living with this body so long, with taking care of it for so long. It's the big issue in life. It keeps tugging at us. And feed me, take me out, take me to the bathroom. Let me lie down. And so you have a sense that your life has been taken over by your body. And for most of us it is in one way or another. It can be really fascinating taking it apart and saying, well, there's not really all that much here that's of any worth. This analysis can be used to overcome lust, to overcome pride in your body. Jamhabu has a nice passage where he says it helps you overcome your fear of ghosts, your fear of the dead. Their bodies are just like your body. It's not all that much different. This, of course, connects with contemplation of death, the fact that death can happen at any time. And again, sometimes it can be a very reassuring thought. It wakes you up, but also at the same time it helps you get a lot of the issues in life into perspective. They're so minuscule, so petty, compared to the fact that at some point you're going to have to leave this body and then move on. That the issues of this particular lifetime will fall away. But, of course, if your mind is not trained, it's going to pick up more issues. This is not a contemplation meant to lead to suicide. It just simply helps get a lot of the issues of the day into perspective. Or you can repeat a word in your mind. The most common one in the forest tradition is Bhutto. You think about the Buddha, all of his good qualities, and try to gather them into that one word and repeat them and be with that one word. Think of all the cells in your body saying it silently inside you. Bhutto, Bhutto, or Dhammo, or Sangho. So whatever topic that the Buddha lists that you find most congenial, focus on that. When you find it's congenial, that it's restful for the mind to stay with that one topic. Sometimes you can think about the sangwega that comes with either the contemplation of the body or the contemplation of death, and that can be restful in the sense it helps, again, put a lot of today's issues into perspective. Once the mind can gather there, you let it rest. Then there's work to do. Because the concentration is centered around a kind of desire. It's an ideal place to see the process of becoming. Becoming means taking on an identity and a certain world of experience. If you're staying here in the present moment, that's your world right now. The issues of the past and the future can fall away. It's just you and the breath, or you and the body, you and your meditation word. And as the Buddha says, you put aside greed and distress with reference to the world outside. You've got this world in here instead. And this, as he says, is what leads to so much suffering. The fact that we keep going from one becoming to another, all centered around a desire. In your daily life, it's the process of having many, many times in the course of sometimes even just a few minutes. You have a desire for something, and the world gets shaped by that desire. If it's a desire for ice cream, the world that's relevant is anything that either helps you get the ice cream or gets in the way. At the same time, your identity in that world is, on the one hand, the person who's going to consume the ice cream, and on the other hand, the person who's going to be able to find the ice cream to consume. So you're both the consumer and the producer, or the consumer and the provider. And as soon as the desire is fulfilled, or you give up on the desire, or something else takes your attention, or you move on to another becoming. And as the Buddha said, this is the process of rebirth. He doesn't use the word rebirth at all. He uses the word birth, but basically it's further becoming or renewed becoming. That's what happens not only on the minor level here, as we just have a state or an imaginary image in the mind, but as we go out in the world based on those desires, actually looking for the ice cream or looking for whatever. Then when we can't stay with the body anymore, the mind's going to, if it still has this habit of going to create a state of becoming, it's going to find another one. As the Buddha said, your consciousness doesn't have to depend on the body. It depends simply on fabrication and craving. You can find a new body that way. And the question is, how does it go from here to there? Consciousness never leaves here. It's always here. It's just the question of which body is here right now for you. It's like the way you go from one dream to another. We're in this dream, and the dream is right here, and then suddenly find ourselves in another backdrop. We're still right here. It's simply that the cast of characters has changed, the scenery has changed. This is how we slip in and out from one life to the next. As the Buddha said, the craving that leads to becoming is the cause of suffering. So if you want to put an end to suffering, you have to know this process well. And here is our place to observe it. Right as the mind gets centered here in this very clear and conscious state of becoming. This is why such an important part of the path is learning how to analyze what's going on as you're in concentration, so you can see this is what the mind keeps doing. This is how it does it. And this is where the fact of basing your concentration or fostering your concentration with virtue is so important, because to observe the process clearly you have to be true. And to be true, you have to live a life that's harmless. Because if we harm other people in various ways, we start lying to ourselves about it, and then we lie to ourselves about everything. It's hard for us to detect when we're lying, when we're telling the truth. As the Buddha said, concentration fostered with virtue has great fruit, great reward. Now, he doesn't say you can't get into concentration without virtue. There are many people who can get into concentration without virtue, but then things go awry. Their observation of what they're doing, their understanding of what they're doing, gets skewed. So our concentration is based not only in desire, but also in virtue, if we want it to go beyond just the concentration. So it actually does have great fruit and great reward. So when you can see how the desire leads to becoming, how it leads to suffering, and are really true to yourself about that, and that's when you begin to gain some release, which it's when you begin to gain some real dispassion for what you're doing, a sense of disenchantment. The word disenchantment, nibbida, relates directly to the Buddha's repeated use of the metaphor of feeding. We feed off the pleasure of concentration as a way of pulling ourselves away from our desire to feed off other things. Other people, relationships, power, status, whatever. But here in the concentration, it's still feeding. And we develop a taste for this pleasure. So we can be less enthralled by our desire for other kinds of food. That's nibbida, disenchantment with things outside. It requires a certain amount of enchantment here with the concentration. But there will come a day when you have to say, okay, even this is not enough. And it'll get the mind to the point where it really doesn't need to feed anymore. That requires a lot of truthfulness on your part. So find an object that you truly like, and truly be persistent, and be intent on it, and truly use your powers of observation. So you can peel away the various levels of stress and suffering that hold the mind in. Begin into concentration, and then settle in there. And when you're well settled, then you can observe this too, either as you move in and out of concentration or as you're in the concentration itself. So this is a case where desire is actually a useful and important part of the practice. So many times we hear the Buddha gives desire a bad rap. Well, he says there are certain kinds of craving that lead to suffering, but there are certain kinds of desire. The desire is part of right effort, the desire that's part of the basis for success. They're actually part of the path. So find a topic that you like, that you truly like and you can truly stay with, so you can truly observe it. All based on the virtue of your life from day to day, so your concentration really does bear great fruit.